Hello, I'm Gary Sternberg with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's Office of Inspector General. I'm speaking with Allie Dutton, a team leader in the OIG's Office of Program Evaluation. Today we will discuss a report that talks about the quality of drinking water produced by small community water systems. A tremendous amount of public scrutiny surrounding the crisis in Flint, Michigan, where the water supply is contaminated with lead, has expanded to important conversations about drinking water across the United States. Many communities are served by small drinking water systems, though Flint does not fall into that category. Allie, for starters, what exactly is a small community water system?
The program evaluation team defined a small community water system as one that serves drinking water to 3,300 or fewer residents year-round. There are about 42,000 such systems in the U.S., serving a total of more than 24 million people nationwide. And those people need safe water for drinking, bathing, washing clothes, and a whole host of essential daily needs.
Is it particularly hard for these small systems to keep up to date with federal regulations?
Yes, most certainly. Compared with larger systems, small systems are less likely to have the technical capacity needed to properly monitor their water for contaminants. With fewer water users to pay the bills, they are also more likely to lack the money necessary to make repairs or replace and upgrade infrastructure. This reality can lead to poor water quality and systems being unreliable, which can pose a significant health risk to consumers.
Have problems already been recognized at some of these small systems?
Yes, they have. For this evaluation, our team selected a sample of small community water systems that have already been designated by EPA as serious violators of the Safe Drinking Water Act. We found that in 2011, there were about 2,000 small community water systems classified as serious violators, including 193 with Tier 1, or the highest level, violations. Tier 1 contaminants require a water system to give 24 hours notice to consumers when a problem occurs, such as failure to maintain microbial treatment, fecal coliform standards being exceeded, or a positive test for contamination.
So, what systems did you look at?
Since two states, Texas and Kansas, and the territory of Puerto Rico, accounted for almost 45% of the U.S. Tier 1 serious violators in 2011, we focused on those three places. We selected 10 small drinking water systems in each place for a total of 30.
And what did you find?
We found some good news. In Texas, we found that the EPA and the states were working together and had made some progress. Although not all of the 10 cases we looked at in Texas made progress toward compliance, most did. On the other hand, in Texas, we also found Tier 1 violations for nitrates and violations for standards related to arsenic, radionuclides, disinfection byproducts, and fluoride.
How about the other two places?
In Puerto Rico, the EPA and the Commonwealth need to take more action to ensure that small systems achieve compliance with the Safe Drinking Water Act. Most systems there did not achieve compliance, and we noted a high percentage of serious violators territory-wide. For example, in 2013, monitoring samples at 35% of the small community water systems violated total fecal coliform standards. Even worse, territory drinking water managers said some systems did not even collect the required drinking water samples to determine whether this water was safe to drink. In addition, 21% of the systems lack disinfection treatment to address total coliform contamination. Territory officials said they informed drinking water systems in Puerto Rico to issue boil order notices more than 2,000 times in fiscal year 2013. Fecal contamination leaves the public at risk of contracting illnesses such as hepatitis or cholera and experiencing symptoms as diarrhea, cramps, nausea, jaundice, headaches, and fatigue.
Why did they have so many problems in Puerto Rico?
The systems in Puerto Rico face long-standing technical, managerial, and financial challenges, such as lack of operator, high electric rates, and low revenue. For example, once trained, many certified operators frequently left small systems, where they served as volunteers, for paid operator positions at larger systems. Also, many of the systems are in remote locations, a common problem for small community water systems. The governor of Puerto Rico began a small drinking water system initiative in August of 2014 to better support drinking water systems. As of yet, the outcome of the governor's ongoing initiative remains unknown.
And what did you find in Kansas?
We found that few systems in our Kansas sample had achieved compliance. Neither the EPA nor the Kansas Primacy Agency took enforcement action at 7 of the 10 cases. At one system, serious noncompliance for high nitrate levels persisted for more than 20 years. For those customers, the town provided bottled water to pregnant women and children up to 6 months old. I should also mention that looking at the entire nation's small drinking water systems, we found that improvements have been made over the last 4 years. Based in part on EPA's work under its enforcement response policy, the number of systems in serious violation decreased by more than a third.
Allie, we've talked about some of the potential health effects from drinking water contaminants in the context of what the evaluation team found. Please tell our listeners more about the range of possible contaminants and how they can harm people.
Drinking water contamination is a very serious matter. For example, consuming high levels of lead and copper may cause liver or kidney damage. Long-term lead exposure in adults can lead to nervous system problems, danger during pregnancy, and brain damage, and can ultimately cause death. High levels of nitrate are harmful to infants below the age of 6 months and may cause a serious illness known as blue baby syndrome, which, if left untreated, can also cause death.
So, what needs to happen to deal with the problems noted in general with small community water systems?
Even with the progress made, the EPA's and state's formal enforcement and compliance assistance efforts have not resulted in compliance for many small systems with serious violations. Without identifying root causes for noncompliance and then coordinating financial and other resources with enforcement, many systems probably will not be able to get there. Therefore, we recommended that the EPA require its regions to provide annual justifications for any lack of formal enforcement action. We also recommended that an existing EPA workgroup on intractable drinking water systems take steps to identify barriers to compliance. In addition, we made recommendations to address specific issues in Puerto Rico and Kansas.
Thank you so much, Allie, for sharing the results of this important evaluation. For more information about this report and other EPA Office of Inspector General work, please visit our website at www.epa.gov/OIG. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at EPAOIG.